Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by me. I am solo podcasting today. I am meandering back into the realms of off-the-cuff ramblings, no essay reads today. And before we dive in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to leave me a glowing review on all of the audio podcast platforms. And as you've read any of my books, Word Up, Little Languaging Hacks for Big Change, The Language of Betterarchy, Yes I Am, and or Pop Propaganda, please and thank you for running to Amazon and leaving me reviews. These things are super, very important. I recently asked ChatGPT why it is that my books have not yet skyrocketed to the top of any and all literary favorite lists. And it went into this long explanation of how I'm too edgy, I'm too weird, I say things that are too conspiratorial, I'm not in any one niche, like I'm not just someone who talks about self-help and personal development. I'm not someone who only talks about media literacy and pop propaganda. So according to this large languaging model, because I am all over the place, as well as a target of the larger corporate institutions and their fake philanthropic organizations that fund the entire literary realm and journalism realm and all of the realms that would allow my books to rise to the surface. And because those entities don't seem to like me very much, my best bet is to ask people like you who listen to my podcast to leave me Amazon reviews, tell all your friends about my books, gift them, et cetera, because I'm not one to buy into limitations. And I know that my books have value and will absolutely find their way to the masses with your support, because it takes a village and you are my village. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the very best way to ensure we stay in touch. I haven't sent out a newsletter in, well, I guess it's only been a week, and I do tend to err on the side of less communication than more communication, because if you are anything like me, my inbox, as plural, are veritable tangled webs of unopened newsletters. And so I don't want to be an irritant in your inbox. My aim is always to bring you value. So I only send out newsletters when I have actual value to share, to give, when there is an upcoming event or webinar or course or book launch to share with you. It is also where I am sharing word of my ever-expanding threadless swag line. So I'm encouraging you to sign up for the newsletter at dannykatz.com. Lastly, on the housekeeping front, I did just lead my very first free pop propaganda webinar. It was what was supposed to be a 45-minute presentation, and because I tend towards the wordy and tangential, it did run a little bit over an hour. It was such a smashing success. I will be leading another one before the end of the year, and all of the information that I shared in that free webinar can be found in my full-length 11-module pop propaganda digital media literacy course, which I created for teens and grown-ups alike. Although I did have a parent on the webinar who said that her 11-year-old took the course and did great with it. So please don't allow my guesstimation of it being teen appropriate to stop you from sharing it with your younger children, because all it can do is help us to recognize media manipulation, propaganda, groupthink, and to safeguard ourselves from the various ploys and manipulations and tools and tricks the social engineers are attempting to deploy upon us. So you can find my pop propaganda course through my website, dannykatz.com. And without further ado, let us dive into today's cornucopia of topics. I am inspired to start off with some reflections from the realm of coaching. I have had a lot of similar themes showing up with my various coaching clients this week. And so, as always, when things show up multiple times, I am figuring to share. And I want to talk to us about gossip. Gossip's going to be kind of an umbrella for this one because it is so very toxic and damaging to the social construct, to the social contract, to our communities, to our relationships and our families. And I want to break it down for us. So the thing with gossip, it's so manifold. I am a firm believer in the notion that it is not a wise idea to say things about people behind their backs that we are not courageous enough or even feeling aligned with saying directly to those people. It just feels like it's a cop-out. And like, if there's something that I'm going to say about someone, I really better have the balls to also say it to that person. So this is a rule that I've had for myself for quite a long time. And it's come up for me personally around my romantic relationships. And another rule that I have is if I catch myself speaking negatively or complaining about my partner to any of my friends, not in a constructive way where I'm seeking reflections as to where I can take responsibility and where I'm operating out of blind spots, rather when I'm just complaining, that's a no-go. And if there's anything that I'm saying about any romantic partners that I may or may not have behind their backs, then I hold myself very, very accountable to quickly scheduling a conversation and sharing what the things that I have been sharing to other people outside of the relationship construct. It's like, what is the difference between a healthy relationship and an unhealthy relationship? Between a conscious, mature, co-creative relationship and a toxic, drama-riddled relationship? I think a lot of it has to do with what is staying within the confines of our relationship contract and within the two people, and I'm gonna assume that we're speaking around monogamous relationships because that's more my lane. And what are we taking outside? So back in the day, like it's singular, you know, like one of the many, many iterations of this Danny that I have incarnated into. In one of those iterations, I was doing a lot of tarot readings. And anytime someone asked me for a tarot reading and their question was about someone they were dating or someone they were in a relationship with, I would say, I don't even have to read the cards to let you know that your relationship sucks if you are reaching out to me, a tarot reader, to advise you about your relationship. And I would say that pretty much every time before I even shuffled the cards, just to let them know, A, my bias and my perspective on it, and also to encourage them, like, are you sure that's really how you want to spend this time right now? Talking about your partner behind his or her back or asking a relative stranger what they think about your relationship? So for me, that's like kind of red flag number one about any romantic relationship is when we're reaching out to a psychic or a tarot reader or an astrologer to do our composite report, not just for like extra information to fortify us for our onward growing together, but as ways to mitigate problems that I'm not talking to my partner directly about. So it started off with the tarot stuff when I realized, like, why are people pooping all over their primary romantic relationships by talking to relative strangers and asking them to reach in to non-ordinary reality for the clarity that they could really come to were they to just talk to their partners? So this came up with a couple that I'm coaching, and I had asked one of the members of the couple because things were pretty heated in that moment. And so I asked, what do you need in this moment? Like, if we could get you all the support you need in this moment, not like, okay, we're fixing the whole relationship, which is gonna, be many more steps down the line, but in this moment, what are you needing right now to get back to a regulated nervous system and feeling more grounded and pleasant in your own vehicle? And this person said, I need for the drama to stop. And I'm like, great, wonderful, amazing clarity. And then my question was, because I was following up on some other things that I had heard this person say, how many people have you spoken to about this particular incident that has you so upset? And the person said, well, only three, just my mom and my dad, and then this other person. And I said, okay, so to get out of the drama, I'm gonna invite you to stop talking to anyone about it at all, except your partner. Now, the reason for this is it's manifold. So, first and foremost, I'm only going to speak for myself. For me, when I'm in any romantic partnership, like I want everyone in my life who's important to me to love and respect my partner as much as I do. And I am well aware of the caustic, toxic nature of gossip because whether it be through indoctrination, through, generations and generations of programming, or whether it's just how the brain is naturally of its own accord, we are, as human beings, operating with a negative bias. So what that means, is that it is much easier for us to cling on to negativity, to complaints, to things that are wrong, than it is for us to lean into things being good. So I'll give you an example. Let's say that, my sister insults me one time, right? Let's say my sister and I go on vacation together. And during that vacation, she says one thing to me that I receive as a slight or an insult. However, she's said, let's say, 10 things throughout the course of our vacation together that are super complimentary, encouraging, loving. My brain is not going to remember the 10 wonderful things that she said to me. It's going to cling to the single negative feedback that I received as an insult because that's the negative bias at work. It leans into the negativity. It's why it's so easy for everyone to talk about all the qualities they don't want in the dream partner they're not manifesting, because all they're talking about is what they don't want the dream partner to have, but how much harder it is to come up with, well, what are the positive qualities? When we feel into, well, what does my dream life look like? Well, it's not this. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this, right? That's the negative bias at play, where it's so much easier for us to lean into what we don't like, what makes us feel like crap, all of those things. So when we're dealing with gossip is talking about people who are not present to fend for themselves. So when I'm talking, let's say I'm kvetching about my partner to my mother, and I'm talking about how cheap he is and how lazy he is and what a big crybaby he is and all of those things. If my mother has not met my partner and has not cultivated her own relationship with him, or even if she has, but given how much more time I've spent with him and how much more time I've spent with her, she's going to very likely, again, there are a few exceptions to this, but more often than not, she's gonna buy into my narratives around him, and those narratives are going to shape how she feels about the partner. So if all I'm doing is complaining about what a nightmare my partner is, then it's more likely than not that whoever I'm complaining to is going to develop their own negative feelings towards or opinions of the partner I'm complaining about. So that's not supportive for a relationship. It's especially not supportive for a family, right? I think all of us tend to hold partnerships that don't lead to bringing children into the world. I think a lot of us might hold those a little more lightly than we hold the partnerships among parents who have brought children in the world, because we're all vying for the families to stay together just for the health and well-being of everyone involved. So especially when there's a larger family unit beyond just a partner that we're talking about, again, this is my perspective. I want the support of my community around my relationships. I want the support of my family around my relationships. And I recognize that when I'm in conflict with anyone, A, if I'm having an emotional reaction and I'm thinking that they're wrong, I'm right, if I'm looping on it, if I'm feeling dysregulated, then I am not seeing the situation clearly, right? Because if I'm triggered, it's because I am operating out of a shadow, or some shadow or trauma is being triggered by the situation. But if I haven't yet honed in on that, if I'm not yet in a place where I can take responsibility, then it's just going to be blame and I'm the victim and this other person is bad. So if I'm sharing that story with my friends and my family and my colleagues about my partnership, it's really unlikely that they're going to be rooting for this partnership to work, right? It's very unlikely that they're going to be in my partner's corner or in the corner of our partnership, because all I'm doing is complaining and telling them how awful it is. And because, you know, most sane people want what's best for their friends and family and loved ones. If they see someone who's constantly being dysregulated and emotionally triggered in their relationship, they're probably not going to be all that supportive of said relationship. So I recognize that when we are in those kind of like heightened, triggered emotional states, when we are in conflict with a partner, of course we want to have a friendly ear to kvetch into, right? To have our backs. And it's, from my perspective, it is important to be very discerning about who those ears are. Are these, you know, I say this quite often, know your audience, like know what the people that we're talking to can handle. Am I speaking to someone who's emotionally intelligent enough to know that like, I just need to vent, but at some point I'm gonna find my way back to where I can take responsibility? Or am I kvetching into the ear of someone who isn't actually rooting for the success of my relationship and is going to consciously or unconsciously take this as an opportunity to speak poorly about my partner or encourage me to step away from the partnership or just kind of hold it, you know, in some sort of like mental filing system to remind me later down the line of like what a jerk this partner is. So I am a fan of having like literally one. For me personally, it is one girlfriend who I feel comfortable kvetching about my romantic partners with, because she knows me well enough to not cling on to it. And she herself is emotionally intelligent, conscious, and awake enough to not allow my dysregulated venting when I'm not seeing a situation clearly to sway her opinion or her feelings of whoever I am in partnership with. So I do recommend that if you are feeling like, okay, I need to vent about this, I need an ear, to really vet whose ear that is, so that there's going to be some neutrality there and you're not going to get someone who's going to dogpile onto the partner or really whoever it is that we're having conflict with, because that's only going to sully and further toxify the relational space. But again, not in a real way based on our interaction, but in this like abstract low vibe, let's just like smear negativity around our collective field because we're bored, or, you know, we're getting off on it or whatever it is. So part of the reason why I had advised this person to cease from telling the story of the thing that created the conflict was A, to not endanger the integrity of the relationship in immediate family's minds, but to protect it and keep it sacred. And in my mind, again, this is my perspective, but I feel like that's the role of both partners in a truly conscious and healthy romantic partnership, is to safeguard that space for one another and to give each other some leeway in recognizing we all have shadows, like we all have our stuff. And of course, couples are going to get into it, but can we hold our confidence in our relationship and hold the integrity of the relationship and keep the conflict contained within the people who are engaging the conflict and not go trying to like drum up support for how wronged we are from those in our immediate social realm? Because while that might feel good in the moment, like scratching a mosquito bite, ultimately it can cause harm for the relationship. This is something that Stephen Jenkinson spoke about in our recent podcast, and that he goes into in quite a bit more detail in his new book, Matrimony, is how the purpose of the wedding ceremony is to enroll the community, the family, and the friends in safeguarding the marriage, the relational contract. According to Stephen Jenkinson, the purpose, like the primary purpose of a wedding ceremony, is to enroll the community in this bond. And it's like a give and take, right? There's a feedback loop in also inviting the wedding couple, I don't know if that's the right terminology, but the bride and the groom, to recognize that their union is not just for them or for their, like, you know, whatever progeny they decide to create, but it's actually a modeling and a demonstrating for the entire community. And this is certainly a theme in all of Stephen Jenkinson's work. And I think there's validity in it, especially as a woman who grew up like super West Coast, you know, fiercely independent. And I didn't have that perspective. And on this, you know, at this phase of my earth walk, I recognize the value in that. And so it's with that in mind that, like, I invite my clients, myself, my friends, everyone in my life to not sell their partners down the river in moments of conflict, and to not sell our friends down the river in moments of conflict, or our siblings, or anyone, to give each other the grace and the leeway to work our stuff out with one another without needing to make like declarative assessments of the quality of the person or the quality of the person's character because of what is coming up in our, you know, very unique alchemized dynamic in the moment. And that's kind of a larger piece for me around gossip in general, is that we're messy, you know, and for me myself, I think, you know, a lot of people in my life would agree that my messy is a little extra messy. It's a little extra ugly, a little extra loud, you know, like all of those things. And so I'm really reliant on and grateful for the grace that those who have and continue, you know, have stuck it out with me and continue to stick it out with me as I continue to evolve and whole myself and integrate and grow, is to not hold those unseemly moments against me, and then to not take, you know, the tiny fractions of whatever they're witnessing or judging or assessing of, you know, the larger unsightly moment, and then go and spread it around to other people who aren't involved, who have nothing to do with it to sway their opinions or their judgments of me. And even if that's not our intention in kvetching about other people or gossiping about other people with people who weren't present to whatever circumstance is inspiring us to move it outside of that context and go smearing it around by way of gossip, like we're all human. That is very likely going to sway their opinions, unless, as I said, they are this very rare, very emotionally intelligent, neutral witness who can take this in from a place of neutrality and not allow it to sway them. But again, that I'm talking, that is like the 0.00001% of human beings. And so I have seen, I've been a part of many communities in the different kind of iterations of my earth walk. And what I have observed of gossip is that it's not really reversible. And this is why I find gossip to be so damaging for any community, any group setting or construct. Once the gossip has been injected, now that infection is just gonna spread. And I have yet to see the cure-all, the panacea for that type of gossip. And so, I mean, my big thing about it is just don't do it. Now, the other piece of gossip, and I will get back to the couple situation in a moment, but the other piece of gossip is recognizing, like, if I am so triggered about a situation, about a person, about a circumstance that I need to move it outside of its organic existence, right? Let's say, like, I get in a fight with the mailman, okay? And if I am so triggered by that, that over dinner with a girlfriend, I need to relay to her what happened, then there is something in that exchange for me to learn about myself, right? Because there's some sort of unacknowledged trigger or shadow or something that is inspiring me to move it, to give it motion outside of its own organic circumstance and smear it around. Now, the healthy way to do this is to invite the reflections. Like, here's what happened with my mailman. Do you think I was out of line? Like, is there a piece in this exchange that I'm not seeing where I'm responsible? Are you seeing like a pattern in what I'm sharing that it would help me to attune to, right? In my perspective, that is like a very healthy and A-okay way to talk about conflict or issues or triggers that we're having with other people, with people who are not those people with whom we're having those issues, when we are looking at where can I take responsibility. But if we're just gossiping to gossip, then there's something there that we're not seeing that is like a key. It's a piece in our puzzle. And when we avoid the opportunity to reintegrate a piece of our puzzle, not only are we missing that for ourselves, but then we're choosing instead to sully the social landscape and to lower the frequency and like chip away at the unity and goodwill in any social contract. So I'll give you another example. And I also want to be clear, like, I'm still mastering this. I think in general, I'm pretty good about not gossiping. The one place where I see is when, like, especially among women and probably men too, but like where we can lean into gossip as a way of connecting. So if I'm having a conversation with someone who I haven't seen in a while and I start asking about other people as a means to like give us something to talk about. But if we're starting to veer into realms where we're speaking unflatteringly or unkindly about other people, or we're inserting judgments or negative opinions, that's a sure sign, like a red flag, that we're off base. Again, assuming that we all want to honor the social contract contract and construct, assuming that we want to raise the collective vibration and move humanity towards more goodwill and more unity, then it's not a good idea to go talking smack about people who aren't present to defend themselves. If that's not our vision, if it, you know, we're some weird kind of Illuminati lizard who wants to sow more discontent among the people, gossip away, because that's a great way to do it. So when I'm kvetching to a girlfriend about this fight with the postman, and I'm not asking for any reflections, I'm just talking about what a dick he is and what a sexist he is and what a pig he is and all of that, I am A, crapping all over the social contract. I'm selling that relationship with the mailman for myself, as well as with whoever I'm talking to. And this is something to be mindful of, is like, I might have a questionable experience with the postman that exists in and of our one-on-one exchange. If I go telling the story of the issue with the mailman to a girlfriend, and if it's not the type of girlfriend who's gonna hold neutral space and nudge me to see where I can take responsibility for the kerfuffle, but if it's the type of friend who's just gonna jump on board out of some kind of like low vibe, outdated, codependent allegiance to having my back, and if she's gonna jump onto the talking smack about the mailman, that is going to exponentially exacerbate any ill will I may have been cultivating towards the mailman, because she's going to be validating it and amplifying it and possibly even building upon it. So the next time I see the mailman, that is going to be bigger, right? That issue that I've had that could have easily dissipated had I just kept it to myself, or consciously had a conversation with a coach or a therapist or a friend who could allow me to see where I was responsible. Instead of those things happening, my judgments, my negative opinions are going to be that much bigger because of having taken the issue outside of our dynamic, talked about it with someone else who's now gonna staple her own opinions to the situation, that's gonna make the ill will bigger. Then if said friend runs into said mailman, or if she's, you know, my neighbor and she has the same mailman, now my issue is more than likely going to carry over into her unconscious feelings towards judgments about the mailman and inform how she's going to interact with him, if she's going to be cold or curt or rude, right? A lot of those things come from judgment. And I have seen this firsthand. There's, you know, anyone who's got the 5-1 profile in human design or in the gene keys knows very well the experience of being projected upon and being gossiped about, because that's in our cosmic blueprint, that we're like these giant projection screens. And so it's definitely been my experience of being gossiped about. And so often in instances where like I'm clueless, totally clueless that there's even a problem, because I'm operating, you know, out of purity and innocence and you know, without this awareness of people's hangups or triggers or indoctrination or whatnot. And I've had the experience of, you know, going to a class, or, you know, seeing someone at work who I haven't seen in a day or a week or so, and all of a sudden they're being like really cold or really curt, but nothing has happened between us that would contribute to that. And what I've come to learn is like, oh, someone gossiped to this person about me, and that has swayed their opinion of me, and now they're behaving out of this toxic, swayed, gossip-infused judgment. That's what gossip does. It's very, very low vibe and caustic. And so in all the communities that I've been in, you know, yoga communities, dance communities, summer camps, women's groups, therapy groups, you know, like art classes, the rodeo grounds in Topanga, like Burning Man, like whatever it is, once the gossip has been inserted, right? Like once someone who had an experience with the person in question that person is judging as negative. Once that person decides to spread that opinion around a community and start to infect the minds and judgments and perspectives of other people in the community, it sours, right? And it creates division, and it creates drama, and it creates feelings of ill will. And what I haven't seen, and I'm not saying it's not possible, but I haven't seen communities walk that back. I haven't seen communities recover from that. I haven't seen communities rewrite the gossip-born negativity into something positive. It creates these cracks and these vulnerabilities. And it's why I really, really do not recommend gossiping. But going back to the initial person who was looking for ways to mitigate drama so that this person could get what this person was needing in that moment, that was another reason why I said, you know, first and foremost, stop telling the story to other people. A, yes, as we've already established, because by telling a negative story to other people, now those people are now going to have a negative perspective on this person's partner, on the health and well-being of the relationship itself. And it's really not anyone's business, because think of like how often our partners are doing wonderful things for us, or our dynamics, our exchanges are so nourishing and fortifying and generative and wonderful, right? We're not gushing to our friends about those instances. And we can bookmark why we don't do that. But it's generally the negative stuff that we're spewing. And so when people are getting, you know, like a tiny fraction of a glimpse at our relationship, and that tiny fraction of a glimpse is composed with primarily negativity, then those people are not going to be vying for these relationships to work out. And that makes relationships in conflict even harder to recover, because it's taking place in a vacuum. And without this like nourishing support of a community that, you know, even neutral would be like ideal, but even better than ideal, I don't know, we can relanguage this at some point, is to have our community like pulling for us and rooting for us and supporting us through these troubled times. But the other reason is that when we tell stories of unpleasant interactions, be it with, you know, our primary partner or the mailman who I mentioned earlier, we are reactivating the negativity and the negative emotions of that exchange in our own vehicles, right? So we're re-triggering and re-traumatizing our psycho-emotional body by transporting ourselves back to that exchange. And like activating the frequencies of that dissonance in our own vehicles. And this is what drama is. Like, it's certainly a very big piece of relational drama. Like, I guess there are different stages of it, right? Like, a couple in and of themselves can have their own drama if they're prone to dysregulated dialogues where there's like name calling or yelling or blaming or like all of those kind of like below the belt frequencies. That's going to be its own kind of contained drama. But then there's the drama that comes from like dragging it out and dragging other people into it, and like spreading what was a relatively contained crisis and enrolling other people in the crisis. And that for sure is going to create mass drama, because we're dealing with so many other factors and dimensions. There's like, okay, the initial dynamic that has its own issues, but then there's the dynamic of like, well, here's Aunt, Betty's opinion on the situation, and here's what Aunt Betty is telling me to do, and here's what Aunt Betty, thinks of my partner. And then there's, the other person talking to her yoga teacher about it, and here's her yoga teacher's opinion, right? So, A, the dissonance and the conflict spreads outside of this like contained confines, but then we're inviting in all these other opinions, and then all these other opinions and people and consciousnesses and orientations are going to be taking the tiny glimpses of the once contained issue and then giving their two cents on it and opining on it and taking it this way and this way. And then you can picture it like if you drop a piece of gum on the sofa, right? If you just very quickly pick it up gently and throw it away, it's not that big of a deal. And you can deal with, the gum and finding a trash can or a therapist or like whatever the issue is, if the gum is the couple and the couple's conflict very easily. But if you leave it there and you like smash it in and then you spread, someone wants to feel what it feels like, and then another person wants to feel what it feels like, and everyone's like spreading it out and smearing it around. Like, we have got a huge mess out of what used to just be a simple, contained, chewed up little nugget of gum, which we could have dealt with very easily. But the drama that we feel, like, I get it. Even though I have in the past tended towards more avoidant attachment styles, it's not to say that I haven't gotten and don't get triggered in disagreements with partners, right? And a lot of times the feelings of those triggers can be very uncomfortable and challenging to hold and contain, and like, my face gets super red and my heart beats really fast, and like sometimes I'll get a stomach ache, and there are all these things. So why would I want to continue to bring those feelings and those sensations up in my body by constantly telling other people the story and moving it around and keeping that chaos and that drama alive in me? Now, some of us are addicted to conflict, are addicted to the adrenaline rush of fighting with partners, are addicted to playing the victim, have some sort of imprinting that has us misassociating conflict and being in the doghouse with love or affection or a relationship, right? That's totally natural. That's fine. But part of the awakening path, the transformational path, and certainly the moving into conscious relationship path is learning to regulate that stuff and starting to recognize where we are operating out of a sort of fishing for or feeding on negative emotions. And then rewriting that and transmuting that, so that we can move into more peaceful, co-creative relationship dynamics. But if we are taking, whatever the bits and pieces of the conflict between ourselves and our partners are, and we're taking that out to other people, it's also infinitely less likely that we're going to be able to see our own parts in it and take responsibility for those parts, because that's not anything that other people can tell us about. Like, unless we're consciously working with a coach, or a therapist to walk us through it. That's what I do with my clients. But what I'm talking about is more that like gossip smearing and talking to our parents about a fight, I got into with my husband, and throwing him down the river in their minds because in the moment I wasn't consciously choosing to hold my discomfort in a contained way, and to go deeper into it to see where I could find the vulnerabilities and the traumas and the triggers out of which I have been operating for myself, right? That I'm not gonna say it doesn't come from talking to our friends about stuff. Some of us have like really wise, badass friends, but when I'm talking about gossiping and just complaining, that takes us farther and farther and farther from the task of finding the vulnerabilities in ourselves, because we're being validated for not doing that. And a lot of times we're being rewarded and enabled for not doing that, because again, humans have a negative bias. A lot of us feed off of conflict. Some of us are operating out of like unconscious Schadenfreude or envy or jealousy because our friends are in partnerships. And so maybe unconsciously, when they're in conflict, we feed into it, right? That's very, very common. But it doesn't matter the reason. Most of us, and granted, we all have different kinds of friends, but from what I've witnessed, most friends and family who are on the receiving end of someone kvetching about their partner are going to validate their friend who's doing the complaining, because I don't know, one of the kind of like retarded Western indoctrinated ideas around friendship or family or whatever is that we just enable invalidate people's bad behavior so that we can like have their backs or be on their side, right? Like I've seen this, it's never made sense to me that like, let's say I'm friends with John and Joan. And let's say John and Joan get into a fight between themselves. And now John's mad at me because I'm not also mad at Joan. But why would I be mad at Joan? Because I never had a problem with Joan. And like, how asinine and codependent and infantile is it for me to take a side in someone else's private and unique relational conflict that I can only ever understand the slightest glimpse of? Like, it's just so low vibe and crummy. And it's a big part of what we're seeing in the larger like culture wars and political landscape that like, and I realize I'm going off on so many tangents, and it's fine. It's totally fine. I know you guys can roll with me, but I'm thinking of the guy who I saw on Facebook who was like, if you're the type of man who feels like women shouldn't be allowed to breastfeed in public, then unfriend me now because I hate your guts. And it's like, why would you go fishing for that? Why are you going fishing for people to not like, to create more division because of some abstract idea in your head that everyone needs to believe the way that you believe? Is it possible that you have a friend in your life who's a great, really great friend, and who maybe was brought up in a very conservative religious household and hasn't yet evolved out of that stage of consciousness? And so because of his religious beliefs, isn't down for that, but is still a good friend and a good person in other ways, right? So it's like kind of the same thing of like when we're trying to generate consensus for our position or our victimhood or the fact that our partner really fucked us over. Like, how is that gonna bode when you and your partner make up and then you go out to dinner with these friends who you just kvetch about your partner to, and they didn't have the great makeup sex that you and your partner had, and they didn't hear all the kind words that your partner said or hear your partner take responsibility. They're just coming into the circumstance holding on to the same resentment that you were off gassing a month ago, but they don't have the benefit of the repair that you do. So therefore you, the gossiper, just brought more conflict and dissonance into your relationship because of that unwillingness to choose to simply sit in the discomfort and go inward and mind the discomfort and mind the bits and pieces of the conflict that we're looping on for the lessons that are ours to integrate, such that we're not swayed and triggered and dysregulated by these types of interactions in the future. And the other example that I probably tried to get us towards like 11 minutes ago, but it just popped into my head. So I'm going to take a sip and then I'm going to take us down that road, is recognizing that the impetus, like, let's say I'm thinking of a visual. Imagine it like your car is stuck, like the car, your battery died, right? You're in traffic and you need the car to be transported out of traffic. So someone gets behind the car and pushes it. So let's call that person who's pushing the car the impetus. That's the impetus that's moving your car from point A to point B. So using the same visual and imagining the dissonance, the conflict, the judgment, the thing you don't like about person X, imagine that as like a little blue VW bug. And there is the impetus that is pushing it elsewhere. So that impetus that is taking a weird conversation between you and your hairdresser and deciding to carry that conversation into drinks with the girls later that night, into your therapy session the next morning, into the hike with your neighbor the next day, right? So that's three different locations that this impetus has moved this conflict into. That impetus is the mechanism that is enabling you in avoiding the crux, the origin point of the trigger that has you feeling so dysregulated about this conversation that you need to bring it up in three other conversations. So it's multitasking is what the impetus is doing. It's sullying your relationship sphere in a massive way that is very, 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 very hard, if not impossible, to heal, to transmute. But it's also working against you and allowing you to take responsibility for whatever has you triggered. And I'm just giving you an example. And the example that I'm giving, hang on, I'm recognizing that I was on my way to giving you a different example. Do you need to hear my internal monologue on this? No. So I'm going to invite it to zip its lip, and I'm going to make a note about the two examples. Okay. So, a very good friend of mine has another friend, we all have multiple friends, whom she's very close to. So we'll call my friend Karen. She's so not a Karen. We'll call my friend Emma. And we'll call Emma's friend Karen. Karen was house sitting with a pool. And so my friend Emma invited me to come over with her for a swim. As we were leaving that hangout, as I was leaving, I felt a weird energy coming off of Karen. Emma told me a couple days later about something that I had said that annoyed Karen and the nasty thing that Karen had said about me once I left because I said this thing. And the thing that I said was about, it's so funny how consistent it is. It was about like some spiritual teacher of hers who I say is controlled op. And this is like the consistent thing. And I'm not saying there's not a place in here for me to do some inner mining to see why it is that I have created this issue for myself. And in the past few years, I've definitely generated mucho, very a lot of gossip about me because of people who get pissed when I tell them that one of their favorite, famous people, whether it's a spiritual teacher or a podcaster or a journalist or a doctor or whatever, is a bad actor or is acting as controlled opposition. And then instead of telling me that they're unhappy with that and fleshing it out with me, they take their annoyance and go smearing it around to different friends in different communities who all of a sudden, next time I see them, are treating me differently, even though we haven't had any direct communication or engagements, but someone told them something and they allowed it to shape not only their perception of me, but how they show up with me. And that does it for the first half of today's podcast. As you are inspired to join me for the second half, which I highly recommend, it's pretty chock full. You can find that over on both my Locals and Patreon communities. at dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats for as little as $5 a month. You get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content and that warm, yummy, fortifying feeling that comes from knowing that you are supporting me in keeping on, keeping on. One last reminder to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com, to race on over there to register for my Pop Propaganda 11 module digital media literacy class, which is truly one of a kind. There's nothing like it on planet Earth. It's really fun. It's really chock full. I have ambivalence about using that word twice in the last 60 seconds, and I'm going to let it go. And I'm going to thank you for sharing your sacred attention. I'm going to thank you for sharing your sacred attention with me and for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.